Everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It's June 3rd, 2024. It's nighttime on June 3rd, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for being here. It was a great weekend. I was up in New York City with my wife. We went and watched darts. The PDC, which is called the Professional Darts Corporation, has their one and only event in the United States at Madison Square Garden in the theater there. The last couple of years, they've had it around this weekend. And it's been really fun to be able to go. There were a lot more people there this year than last year. Some of that probably had to do with a guy named Luke Littler, 17-year-old kid who almost won the world title. Really fun to watch. It's interesting to see the parallels between darts, which is a participatory sport, which is obviously smaller than golf, and has a different economic makeup, you know, eco-social makeup. But it is a sport with a lot of diehard fans who really enjoy getting together, playing darts, talking about darts, watching darts, having fun. That's pretty much golf. And I think I found my kind of yin to my yang of golf, so to speak, with darts. So really cool weekend to be able to do that. And then for all of you wrestling aficionados out of there, if you're listening to it, I got to meet William Regal. Got to shake his hand. Could not have been a nicer man. Really, really cool. He was at the darts. Along with Cesaro, Claudio Castagnoli, and Wheeler Yuta, they all used to be the Blackpool Combat Club. All right, so let's talk about the weekend that was in golf, right? Well, we have something going on right now that's really just kind of wrapping up, which is golf's longest day, U.S. Open final qualifying. It's not all of it, but pretty much all of it's done today here in the United States. There are three international ones, I believe. But, you know, about a third, a little bit more than a third of the field comes out of these qualifiers. And it's unique about golf. It's unique compared to the Open. The Open qualifying is a much smaller group of players getting through from their four final sites. And this is unique to the U.S. Open in that, like, 60 players get through. And it's a really cool day. I got to cover it for the first time Golf Channel had ever done it in 2012. They might have done it in 2011, but I did do it in 2012 in Columbus. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever covered. And I've done it here. I've done it since Golf Channel here in the D.C. area with my country club has a qualifier basically as long as I've been cognizant of it. And it's really fun to just go over there and watch high-pressure golf because it brings together a wide variety of people. I mean, they're all incredibly talented players, right? You could be anywhere from 13, 14 years old to your mid-50s, maybe 60, trying to qualify for the U.S. Open. You could be a weekend golfer who just happens to be very talented. You could be former collegiate player, former professional, active professional, PGA Tour player, Korn Ferry Tour player, Mini Tour player, amateur. I mean, you could be anybody. If you're good enough to have gotten through locals, or if you're good enough to get right into the final qualifying, formerly sectional qualifying, then you can play and you have a chance. And some of that comes down to luck of the draw, where you try to put yourself in terms of a sectional, you know, a final qualifying site. And some of that comes down to just how you handle that day. It's a 36-hole day, morning round, afternoon round. A lot of players know they're toast after the first 18, so a good chunk withdraw. So it starts to get much smaller after the morning round. And then it's a grind to see if you can get into one of those spots outright or if you find yourself in a playoff. The playoffs are very compelling, typically, very dramatic. And they can go down to dark, really, to determine who gets a spot or several spots, depending on the playoff size and what they're playing for, into the U.S. Open. You have playoffs for alternates. I mean, you can have all kinds of stuff happen in a 36-hole day at one golf course, and it's a special thing. I got to play in a local qualifier in 2012. I tried. I failed miserably. I shot like 85, 84 that day. I played well in the first hole, and then I think I made a triple or a quad on the second hole because I lost my drive left into the junk, and it just was downhill from there. Didn't play that poorly other than the quad. I actually hit the ball to the wrong green on a hole because it was a golf course I had never seen before until that day. I came from the Players' Championship, which I was covering for Golf Channel, and came in and, like, that next morning played for U.S. Open qualifying. One of the dumbest things I've ever done. And it was so cool, though, because I got to play with a guy named Brian Jackson, and we still are friends to this day. We met that day. He still lives in the Richmond area. And he came up to play, and he worked for Cobra Golf and TaylorMade Golf and just a really good player. And he chipped in, I believe, on the 16th or 17th hole of our round to get to the number that would get him to a playoff. Didn't wind up getting through the playoff. But just to see someone play that kind of golf under that kind of pressure, I feel more privileged to have seen that now since I haven't done it in that long. And I'd like to try again someday. I'd like to try to qualify for the U.S. Open someday again. Maybe next year. Who knows? But it's one of the best days in golf that you can have, whether you get through locals or not, final qualifying or not. To have those 2 days, if you get a chance to play both or just one, hopefully you're good enough to just have to play one. It's really, really cool. So the reaction kind of stuff starting to come out. Justin Lauer qualified for his first major championship out in Ohio, where he's from. Very emotional, shedding tears about being able to play in his first major, earn his way in. Unfortunately, his father passed away when he was 15 years old. So he really wants to play on Father's Day and do that for his father. And that hit me pretty hard. And there's going to be other stuff like that today. And there are going to be people who are super happy, super dejected. They're going to wait another year. They're going to sign up again and put themselves through that ringer all over again for the hope that they get that piece of paper at the end of that day that says you're in the U.S. Open. And it's really cool to see people's dreams come true. So we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. We are going to try to do a live show tomorrow. I know I've been trying to get this together on my end, and I'm trying to do too many things, but I promise we will get to doing live shows, and they will be available on video, on X, on YouTube, and Facebook. Very much looking forward to having those starting. It's a precursor to the TV channel, so that's coming along very soon as well. It's going to be really cool when that comes along. So we'll start kicking that up, and again, trying to do that 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because once you get to Thursday and through the weekend, we've been trying to do the show 5 days a week over the years, but once you get to Thursday, the golf's on TV, so why would you watch me? What would be the point? And if, for whatever reason, it comes along that there's enough interest, then maybe we could try that, but at least initially Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Okay, let's talk U.S. Women's Open. Yuka Saso wins for the second time in her career, and both of those wins on the LPGA are U.S. Women's Opens. She won a couple of times in the JLPGA in, I think it was 2020, and that was back when she was under the Philippine flag, and now she's playing for Japan, and those things are cool. That's cool that she was able to win under different flags. She's the youngest two-time winner of the U.S. Women's Open in its history. So we're talking three-quarters of a century's worth of these things. And she's the youngest to get to two. That puts her in pretty cool company with like a Kari Webb, MB Park type of player. Pretty wild to be able to have done that. She's the third player in LPGA history, which goes back to 1950. So we're close to 75 years here of history to have won two majors in her first three wins. That's pretty interesting because there are not many players who have done that kind of thing. Won two majors right out the gate as their two wins. She was phenomenal in the back nine at Lancaster. That was really cool. Lancaster, I should say. Lancaster. Yeah. Lancaster. Sorry. Sometimes I miss that up. Lancaster. I mean, she's unbelievable on the back. Four birdies and five holes in the middle of the back nine. Winds up bogeying 17. She could have found herself in a very brutal position. She four-putted early. I think it was the sixth hole. And she had a really tricky second putt or first putt on 17. Well above the hole. Plays a ton of break. And the idea of playing a ton of break wasn't wrong, but she got the speed a little bit wrong. Goes past, misses, makes bogey. I mean, it could have been a four-putt. Could have been a double bogey that maybe have opened the door a little bit for Andrea Lee, who was trying to keep up. But then she pulls out three wood. They moved up 16 to make it a drivable par four at 239 yards. And Andrea Lee duck hooks a three wood into a bunker. That takes her out of that. And that was enough for her. Minji Lee seemed in control early and then just lost it. Just went south extremely quickly. I thought she was going to be the person to win the trophy on Sunday just because she's done it before, like Yuka, and also has done it a couple different times in majors. I mean, she's got the game to be able to win five, six, seven majors by the end. She thrives on the tougher conditions, I think. She thrives on the tougher courses. Turns out Yuka Sasso does as well. And her 68 was tremendous. And then credit to Allie Ewing for shooting 66 on the final day. Yeah, she didn't have a chance to win, but she shot 66 on a really tough golf course to get in there and have herself a great payday. But for Yuka Sasso to be able to, and she talked about this earlier in the week. I can't remember if it was after Friday or Saturday. But she said, hey, you know, I won the U.S. Women's Open for the first time at 19 at Olympic. Olympic was brutally difficult. The rough was super thick. I don't even know if they had a true first cut. It was one of the most difficult U.S. Opens, I've seen. And she managed to win in that environment, being able to stay patient, knowing the value of pars, knowing when she might have an opportunity to attack. But she said of winning that early at 19 that it kind of messed her up a little bit because the weight of the world falls on you being a U.S. Women's Open champion. You've won the biggest event in women's golf, bar none. And now at 19, you have to go do something with it. You can't just win it once and then fade away. Then you were a fluke, and a lot of golfers have that kind of complex and feeling about it. So then you go and you try to go win again, and you have to learn how to deal with the pressure on yourself as much as from other people. I personally think the pressure in life, the biggest pressure you apply is to yourself. It's not from other people. I mean, it can be from other people. They can yell and scream at you and threaten you and all that stuff. At the end of the day, you decide what matters. You decide what matters to you. If it's in a job and, you know, someone threatens to fire you because you don't do this or do that, you decide whether you want to do it, whether it matters to you. The biggest pressure you can apply is from yourself. You've got to do this. You want to do this. You need to do this for whatever reason. And she had not been able to get that next win. She finished in the top three in two of the last three majors last year, so she was getting there. She was getting closer, but hadn't done anything this year really. And then, bang, here comes this week. And now she has, not that it needed validation, but she's validated the first win. Now she's won twice. She has a record that is going to be pretty hard to beat, being the youngest two-time U.S. Women's Open champion. She's demonstrated that she can play incredible golf on really tough setups. Lancaster was awesome. It's a William Flynn that was fabulous. They didn't have to trick it up. They made it 10.5 on the stimp. It got up into the 11s probably, and that's fine. That's plenty fast. The greens were incredible. The conditioning was great. The surfaces were firm enough, but not unfairly firm. The hole locations were mostly fair. I don't think there was one that was egregiously bad. I know a lot of folks will gripe about 12, but they shouldn't. It was just a good, tough test. It's a tough hole. There's not much you can do about it, whether you hit a good one or you pay the price. And I thought that was an excellent golf hole. It was really fun to watch. I wish that this club could get this championship more often. It's a tremendous host. The community rallies behind it. People rally behind it. They were great all week by every single player's account that I heard. I had a friend who's here in the area, took his children up on Saturday, and he said it was fantastic. Just really, really cool. And while at the same time I want, and I'm glad, very glad, that the U.S. Women's Open is going to venues more people associate with the U.S. Open than the U.S. Women's Open, and that means the quality of the rotation has gone up substantially, I don't necessarily want that to always come at the cost of places like Lancaster, because those places deserve a really cool opportunity like this more than every 15 years or so. And this was 10 years basically between hosting, 15 to 24. But now I can't really have it again until 2037. So you're looking at the same kind of window, a little bit longer, right? Between this community having a chance to have this week and have it again. And that's the soonest they can have it. And that's part of the problem of the USGA committing to so many of these sites so far in the future. But it's also that there are so many good ones, and they want to elevate the event to places that the average sports fan associates with the U.S. Open, with the Pebbles, with the Oakmonts, with the Marriott, those types of things, Pinehurst. That's what they want. And I understand the rationale, and it makes a lot of sense, and I like that. But Lancaster was awesome. And I kudos to them, hats off to them for being such a great host, great community for this championship. So really cool for you, Casasso. I have a feeling Minji Lee's got something coming right around the corner. I would not be shocked if she wins a major this year. Let's put it that way. She loves Evian. She could play very well in the remaining majors of the year. So something there to think about. Nelly Korda missed the cut. I think that kind of chalks itself up to that 10 on the third hole of the tournament. Other than that, she wasn't so horrible, I don't think. But I think that got in her head. My curiosity will be if that stays in her head for very long. Because if it does, that could be a turning point in what is an already historic year. If she gets mad about it or just chalks it up to like a freak occurrence, doesn't really let it bother her or makes it motivation to make her better, even better, then some crazy things are still on the docket from her this year. Either way, great tournament. Really enjoyed it. Probably one of the better U.S. Opens I've seen in recent memory. All right, want to spend just a couple more minutes on the Robert McIntyre or the McIntyre family winning the RBC Canadian Open. Robert won his first PGA Tour title, won by a shot, 16 under total. Hamilton Golf and Country Club up in Ancaster. I don't know how they say it up there. Ancaster, let's say, in Ontario, Canada. And he did it with his dad, Dougie, on the bag. He called his dad last week on the weekend, said, "Hey, I need you to come to Canada and caddy for me. I need your help." And his dad, who's, I guess he calls himself a grass cutter, so I'm assuming he works, landscaping kind of thing. But he comes over to Canada, gets on the bag, they get into contention. Bob McIntyre's great on Saturday. I mean, it felt like within 30 minutes he had pulled four ahead of the field. There's just kind of this sudden stretch where it's like, oh man, he's up a ton. And it got tight on Sunday, lost. He had a five-shot lead, as big as five that I saw, wound up getting down to one, wound up winning by one. Victor Perez made a move on Sunday. Then Ben Griffin makes his move. He gets into the house. And as the fog's rolling in, here comes big shot Bob, who finishes it off, wins that first PGA Tour title. The emotion between those two was really, really cool. Dougie got Bob into golf. Used to take him out, to the local course, get holes in, get a chance to play, get better, learn how to be a better golfer, working with his son. And then to be there for that moment on the bag, helping his son to win that first PGA Tour title. You can't ask for a whole lot better than that. As a parent, as a son, as a kid, to have that moment with one of the most important people of your life. And that could have been his spouse. I mean, it could have been, he's got a girlfriend. It could be whoever you wanted to share that with, whether it's your best friend, whether it's your spouse, who could also be your best friend, of course, but whether it was your family member, whatever. To have a moment like that, that's got to be something really cool to savor for the rest of your life. And I thought it was interesting because they had the interview with him after, and Amanda Baleonis is talking to Bob, and then he turns to Dougie, and they're both just very emotional. They can't believe this happened. Can't believe it happened with him on the bag. All this lifetime of work coming to fruition. And then he said something very interesting, Robert did, because Amanda said, you know, you get into all the big events now. You get into next week at Memorial. You get into the U.S. Open. You're into all these different things because you get into the top 60 in the world, basically. And Bob said, I'm just going to go home. I'm ready to go home and celebrate this and have I'm going to have a multi-day bender. We're going to celebrate this thing. And I thought he was kind of BSing, thinking, well, surely he's going to show up to Memorial. I mean, it's a $20 million tournament. He's guaranteed basically $50,000 if you're sentient and $100,000 if you don't totally mess it up. And nope, he withdrew. He withdrew. He is at home, I assume, in Scotland right now. Well, right now it's 1 a.m. He might still be out, but kudos to him. You won $1.7 million for winning the tournament. Yes, you can win substantially more if you somehow manage to win at Memorial, a place you've never played that's going to be set up like the U.S. Open from 1990. Or you can go celebrate, have the time of your life, come back for the actual U.S. Open, go play Travelers, which is a little bit more like Hamilton Golf and Country Club, rack up some points, rack up some world ranking points, rack up some money, FedEx Cup points, all that stuff, and just enjoy the rest of your summer. You've done it. You did what you set out to do by taking this tour card. And to have your dad on the bag, I don't think he's staying on the bag. Doesn't sound like it. Sounds like Bob's going to have to find another caddy. And he struggled trying to find a guy to work with. He kind of lamented this a few weeks ago. I talked about it in our newsletter, The Break, that he had lamented in Myrtle Beach that it was a much lonelier, isolated existence on the PGA Tour than the DP World Tour, where a lot of guys just kind of go out to dinner together and have fun, and everyone kind of knows one another. It's a little bit more tight-knit of a community. And by the way, I think that's why the DP World Tour fields better Ryder Cup teams, because they know one another. They care about one another. And even if you didn't play at the same time as somebody, you know they're in the community, and that's different than the PGA Tour. But for him to be able to figure it out, hey, here's what I need, I think, right now to be able to do this. I need some home cooking. I need a familiar face. And he got that in his dad. Hopefully he can figure out someone to work with him moving forward. That maybe it's not the same degree of familiarity, but someone to work with that can work with him that'll feel more like a friend than a caddy. And some people who are successful in golf, they need a caddy that's more like a friend, just kind of like how Dustin Johnson did it with his brother. Or some people need something more professional, which is kind of more like Steve Williams. And some people need a little of each. It's a spectrum. And part of the battle of the PGA Tour or any professional golf tour is figuring out who best you work with, who brings out your best, who makes you calm when you're nervous. Well, nervous is, or as calm as you're going to be, those types of things. And that's a lot of trial and error for some people. And I think it takes some guts to make a decision, but 15 starts into your PGA Tour career. These things aren't working. I need something different. Something is not going right. So I'm going to do this instead. And he made the right call. It worked out for him. And I hope it continues to work for him. It was fabulously entertaining to watch him play golf. I really like watching him play. So congratulations to Bob McIntyre. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. We've got a pretty big slate of tournaments this week. Got Memorial, right? I mean, that's 45 of the world top 50 playing. You've got Live in Houston if those things interest you. You've got, by the way, the former site of the Houston Open. You've got the LPGA in the Atlantic City area with the ShopRite LPGA Classic, one of my favorite tournaments. I played the Media Day last couple of years. The Ross course there that hosts the event is so much fun. The community really gets behind the tournament. I like it a lot. It's going to be a great week there. You've got the BMW Charity Pro-Am on the Korn Ferry Tour. So you've got basically their version of the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. 80 Pro-Am teams, 3 days of competition, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday's all pros. Really good golf course down there at Thorn Blake Club hosting, and then Carolina Country Club also hosts the first two rounds. And then on the DP World Tour, they've got the Volvo Car Scandinavian Mix. So you've got DP World Tour players and Ladies European Tour players competing together. Same tournament, different tees, same purse. Lynn Grant won this a few years ago, I think by 9. It's a tournament that should be fun to watch. Should be a lot of fun to watch. So, great week of golf ahead. Oh, and the seniors are in Wisconsin for the American Family Insurance Championship, which is Steve Stricker's to do. He hosts the event there. So, big week of golf. And then we get right back into the saddle for another major. It's a great time of year for golf. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Tomorrow we'll talk a little bit more on camera, live for real. We'll see how it goes. Could be a total disaster, so a mea culpa in advance. But we're going to talk about the latest news. We'll talk about what happened in sectionals / final qualifying, some other stuff as well. And looking forward to doing that live with you tomorrow again on X, YouTube, and Facebook Live. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on Two Off the First.